All right, so this is Bio 160. And let's see, it's around what? May 8th. A week and a half or so until the last exam. And we finished urinary system last time. But I think we need to go over just a couple other things about the urinary system. And I gave you another handout that you should practice labeling, because that could be an exam figure. And yeah, it will be. And what is that thing? What's the structural and functional unit of urine formation? That's the nephron. So everybody should have one of these things right here. The picture in your book is pretty good. The illustration in your book is good, but it's a little complicated when you look at it. But the one that I just handed out is labeled. You might want to photocopy that and then white out the labels and photocopy it again, and then just practice labeling it, because that's going to be exactly what's on your test. And if you want to get really good at it, probably what you could do is draw it yourself just from your own mind and then label it. Okay? So that's a really good exercise. So maybe we should do that right now. Okay? On the board. And you can just kind of follow what I'm doing. So if we have a nephron, I tell you what, what's a nephron going to produce?
Urine.
It's going to produce urine. That's right. And in order for that nephron to produce urine, remember, that's a structural and functional unit of urine production. If you know how a nephron works, you pretty much know how the whole kidney works. All right? So that's a really nice picture to have in your mind. So here we got a nephron. All right, so nephron. And if you think of a nephron, it's got two general kinds of components to it. What are the two general components of a nephron? They contain different things. I think I heard something good over here. A tubular element. Let's write that down. So number one. Tubular, and this is all in the nephron. Tubular elements. And then the other one is vascular. All right, so that's number two. Vascular elements. Okay, and when we say vascular elements, what's the junk inside this vascular stuff? Blood. You're right. So we got blood in vascular elements.
Okay.
And what do we got in the tubular elements?
Okay.
How did you know I was going to ask that question? Oh, I did. Okay. All right. So we have filtrate inside these tubular elements, inside the nephron tubes. And what does that become? That's going to become urine. All right. So filtrate has got to go through the whole nephron before it's really processed into being urine. And where does that come from? Comes from fluid that's inside the blood, right? That's the whole purpose of the kidney, is to clean the blood. All right, so tubular elements. Let's start with the proximal element and go to the distal element. And what's the proximal element? That means the one in the beginning or the one in the end?
Beginning.
The beginning. Yep, beginning, proximal. Distal means farther away. All right, so the proximal end, we have Bowman's capsule. That's the first part. And the stuff that gets into Bowman's capsule is what we call filtrate. And that filtrate then is going to move along through these tubules. And when it leaves Bowman's capsule, what's the next tubule that it's got to go into? The proximal convoluted tubule. So that's the first one, proximal convoluted. And why do we say convoluted? Because it's all twisted up and curves, right? It bends. Maybe I say twists, but you know, I don't know if it twists, but for sure it bends, right? It's all bent up. That's what convoluted means. It means all bent up. And depending on your definition of twisty, I guess it twists around, right? Okay. And then, and what's in this proximal convoluted tubule? We call that filtrate. Right? It's filtrate in there. All right, and then from the proximal convoluted tubule, where does it go?
Loop of Henle.
Yep, the loop of Henle, and then in particular, the descending loop of Henle. And what's in that tube?
Filtrate.
It's still filtrate. It's being processed. And then it's got to go into the ascending loop of Henle. So this Henle guy has got two, one loop has got those two components to it. All right, and then where? The next part is the distal convoluted tubule. And what's in the distal convoluted tubule? Filtrate. It's still filtrate. And now I'll tell you, I think I told you what filtrate is, but we'll go over it again. And the distal convoluted tubule, is that straight tube? No, it's convoluted. It goes into the collecting duct. And at the end of the collecting duct, what do we got? It's not filtrate. That is now urine. Okay? Leaving the collecting duct. Okay. So do you see all that on that figure that I gave you? Nicely, the illustration I gave you? It's all on that illustration. It's really nice. All right. Okay, now what about vascular elements? What's the proximal vascular element? Don't forget, what's in a vascular element? Blood. What's the proximal part of the vascular element of a nephron? It is the afferent arteriole. Afferent arteriole is bringing blood to a special capillary. And what do we call that capillary? It's like a ball of, like a meatball or ball of spaghetti or something. The glomerulus. Glomerulus. This is capillary number one. So blood goes through that glomerulus and it goes into another vessel. What's the next vessel it goes into? The efferent arteriole. Now, how come we don't call that a vein? How come we don't call that a vein? What's the definition of a vein? Close. I heard the correct answer right here. A vein takes blood back to the heart. Look at the diagram that I gave you. Is it taking blood to the heart? Nope. Okay. So we call this efferent arteriole because it's not a vein. It's not taking blood back to the heart. Where is it taking it? It's taking it to, oh, look at your diagram again. To the peritubular capillaries. Peritubular capillary. What does peri mean? That means around, surrounding, peritubular capillary. And what should I say? Number what? Two. Peritubular capillary. And then it's going to go into a vein. And when it goes into a renal vein, where does it go? Back to the heart. If it's in a vein, it's going to go back to the heart. Okay. So, I guess maybe we'll just draw this out on the board. And this is probably what you should be able to do at home. Now, what I didn't talk about yet are the processes. Maybe I'll make a list of the processes that are happening. And then when I draw it out, we'll see where that happens. So, number three, right here. What are the three processes that happen inside the nephron? So these are processes that happen. The first one I like is filtration. The second one. Tubular reabsorption. And the third one is tubular secretion. Now, that's not on that slide that I gave you, but you should be able to draw it in there. And when I draw it on the board, you'll see where that happens. Okay? Tubular secretion. So those are the three kinds of things. Now, I guess while I have it here, let's just say where filtration takes place. We got two different fluids. We got blood and what else? Filtrate. Okay? So if we're going to think of a direction of movement for filtration, guess which way it goes? It goes from blood. Stuff moves from blood to the filtrate. And so we call that filtration. Blood to filtrate. All right? Now reabsorption is the opposite. Which way our substance is going to move? Not from blood to filtrate, but reabsorption is the opposite, so it goes from filtrate to blood. That's the direction for reabsorption. And then the last process, tubular secretion, okay, is going to be the opposite of tubular reabsorption. So how does that go? If it's the opposite, it starts in the blood, and it ends up in the filtrate. Okay, now here's a quick question. After filtration, after stuff goes from blood to filtrate, and then after the filtrate, after tubular reabsorption, stuff gets reabsorbed from the filtrate, put back in blood, and some additional steps of stuff that's in blood putting into the filtrate by tubular secretion. Guess what you have after all these three things? Somebody said it. Then you have urine after all these three things, and then it comes out the collecting duct. Okay? Okay. So let's draw this on the board. And you can look at your diagram, but you know what? It might be handy for you actually to draw this out so you can see what's going on. So let's start with the tubular elements. Where's that? Oh, that's one right here. Okay, tubular elements. What's the first thing? Bowman's capsule. Bowman's capsule kind of looks like this, kind of looks like a little pill or something. All right, and I'm going to draw it just a little bit bigger, I think, so I can write something in there. What's the stuff that gets into Bowman's capsule? The filtrate. Okay, and then it's going to go through a tube, so it's a tube, so filtrate is going to go through this tube, but I'm not going to draw a tube everywhere because it gets too messy. I'm just going to draw a line, right? And what does this tube look like? Straight line or what? Yeah, I'm not doing it right. I'm just drawing a straight line. That should not be a straight line. It should do what? Yeah, it should curve around a lot, right? Should curve around. And what do we call this? This is the proximal convoluted tubule. Right? Proximal convoluted tubule. And then the next part of the tube dives deep down into the medulla of the kidney and comes back up. So this is a loop. What do we call a loop? Loop of Henle. And in particular, so let's see, filtrate is moving out like this and it's moving down like that. And then over here it's going to be moving back up. So what is this right here called? Descending loop of Henle. And this is the ascending loop of Henle. And now we're almost done, but not quite. We got a couple tubular elements left to go. What do we got? Distal, and don't forget it's what? Convoluted. So the filtrate moves through this, and then finally, okay, it's going to get into this thing over here, that's going to be urine coming out. And so this big tube right here, what do we call that? That's the collecting duct. And then after that, it's urine. So that's all the tubular elements. Now we just got to put some vascular elements in there. You know what? I wonder if I have red. Let's see. Wish me luck. Mostly because all the blue markers that we have there are almost out of ink. So here's something that's close to red. All right, let me know if you can see that. Is that dark enough for you to see back there? Good enough? Okay. So here we have blood going to enter the nephron. What do we call this structure, this vessel that's bringing blood into the nephron? Yep, the afferent arteriole. If you say afferent, you would be right. So afferent arteriole comes in, and it gets into Bowman's capsule, and it makes this capillary bed. What's the function of a capillary bed? Exchange takes place there. Because the walls of the capillary are real thin, things can either enter the capillary or leave, and in this particular case, stuff is going to leave the capillary. And this structure, this special capillary inside Bowman's capsule, is called the glomerulus. And the capillaries here are kind of special. They're what we call fenestrated. I don't know if I have a question on that, maybe not. But they're fenestrated, and what that means is that they have special holes between the cells, and maybe even within a cell, that makes them even more leaky. A lot of stuff leaks out of these capillaries. And can you remember what the fluid part of blood is called? Yep, because you know you got the formed elements, the red blood cells and the white blood cells and platelets, and then the liquid part we call plasma. So plasma leaks out of these capillaries because they're really, really leaky into Bowman's capsule. And that stuff that leaks out we call is filtrate. So this process of stuff leaving the blood going into Bowman's capsule is which is what process? Step number one right here. That's filtration. So I'm just going to put on number one right there. Plasma leaking out of the glomerulus into Bowman's capsule. But there are still some things in plasma that don't get out. Very large proteins don't get out, but small molecules do. Right, so what things can be filtered? Well, I'll put it over here. For instance, sodium, that's a little molecule that gets filtered. Water is a little molecule that gets filtered. Glucose is still a little molecule, and that gets filtered out into the filtrate right here, and that all will eventually end up in urine. But for instance, do you want glucose to end up in the urine? No. Because what would we call that condition?
Diabetes.
That's diabetes mellitus. And your body needs glucose to make ATP to stay alive. So in this step right here, filtration, your body loses a lot of glucose. And if that were to happen, you know, possibly you could starve to death if you had glucose in the urine, right? That's not a good thing. That would be like on your way home stopping at a gas station and buying a full tank of gas, putting all that gas in your engine and your gas tank, and then when you get home, put a hole in the gas tank and let it dribble out on the ground. You don't want to be losing glucose in urine. So when glucose gets into the filtrate, guess what your body does? It reabsorbs it. That's what this next process is all about. We're going to talk about that in just a second. Okay, so now blood gets into the glomerulus. It gets filtered. And then blood leaves the glomerulus. What is this vessel called here? This is the efferent arteriole. And we say that's an arteriole because it's not a vein. Because a vein takes blood where? To the heart, and it's not taking it to the heart, it's going to take it to another capillary bed someplace. And I'm just going to draw it very artistically, not like your book. I think a little bit better than your book. Okay, so here you have another capillary bed surrounding all these tubules right here. So what do we call all these capillaries? The peritubular capillaries. That's capillary bed number two. So these are the peritubular capillaries. Now, do you remember what that blood vessel system, that vascular system is that has two capillary beds back to back? We didn't make a really big deal of it in this class, but it's kind of special because most circulatory patterns are set up so that you have your heart, vessels leaving the heart we call arteries. These are arteries leaving the heart, and we have vessels bringing blood back to the heart. What do we call those? Those would be veins. And what do we got between veins and arteries? You have one capillary bed. All right, that's the usual circulatory pattern. But can you see this is different? What's different with this one right here? You got two capillary beds back to back. So here is number one. Here is bed number two. And this vessel that connects these two capillary beds, this one right here we call a portal vessel. That's a portal blood vessel. And you have only a couple of them in your body. Huh? Yeah, some people call it a vein, but you should know it as a portal vessel. I don't say vein necessarily, because why? It's not taking blood back to the heart. It's sort of like a vein because it's low pressure. And it contains more venous blood, okay? So it's not bad to call it a vein, but I call it a portal vessel, which is probably even better. Okay, so there's that portal vessel to this capillary right here. Now, what about that glucose? We should be worried about that glucose. It's in the filtrate, which is this black tube right here. What happens to that glucose? We don't want it to go to waste. It gets reabsorbed. So we got, for instance, glucose. Let's put some glucose right here. Glucose. Where's it going to go? It's going to go from the stuff in these black tubes right here is what we call filtrate. It's going to go from filtrate to blood. It's going to be reabsorbed. Right? So that's what we call tubular reabsorption. And as a matter of fact, of all the blood that gets into the glomerulus, 20% becomes filtrate. 20% of the blood. So that means how much you lose a lot of water through this process. What would happen to you if you were to lose that water? Yeah, we turn into a potato chip probably just a couple minutes. All right, so not only is glucose reabsorbed, but what else has to be reabsorbed? Water. H2O is reabsorbed. And if you're a little bit deficient in sodium, sodium will be reabsorbed as well. So things that your body needs get reabsorbed. So this arrow right here, how should I label this arrow right here? With a number two, right? So this is number two right there. And you see how it goes? Filtrate the blood. All right, so how many other processes do we have on this kidney left? There's only one, okay, which is tubular secretion. Okay, there are compounds that are kind of toxic in your body. They're based on amino acid metabolism. They have nitrogen groups on them. They produce ammonia, and that ammonia is then converted into urea. Urea is toxic, but not as toxic as ammonia. But your body wants to get rid of urea. And it can only filter 20% of it out through filtration process. So your body wants to get rid of more of it. So you have urea in blood right here. And your kidney puts it in. Where does it put it? Where is this arrow going? It's the ascending loop of Henle. And what's the stuff inside this loop? Okay. The filtrate. So your body will take it from blood and put it into filtrate. And what's the name of this process? Secretion. So that's number three. An example of the compound that's going to be secreted would be, for instance, urea. So that's tubular secretion. So at the end of all three of these processes right here, what comes out is urine. So urine formation is a result of filtration, then Bowman's capsule, tubular reabsorption in the rest of the kidney tubules and the peritubular capillaries, and then tubular secretion in the same area, the tubular parts of the nephron and the peritubular capillaries. Another example, say maybe for lunch you had a bag of potato chips all by yourself, didn't share it with anybody. Guess what you have a lot of in your body now?
Sodium.
You have excess sodium. So guess what your kidney can do? Give me the name of the process that's going to happen in the nephron, okay, as a result of eating all those potato chips. Filtration. Yeah, you're going to have a lot of sodium being filtered out, but what else is going to happen? You still have way more sodium than you need in your body. Reabsorption is going to take sodium from the filtrate and put it back in the blood. Will that happen? Nope, because you have already too much in your blood. What's going to happen? Tubular secretion. Okay? So tubular secretion will work for excess ions that you have. Excess sodium or excess potassium, even excess hydrogen ion, if you ate a lot of acid, for instance. Why would you want to eat a lot of acid? Yeah, like Coca-Cola has a lot of acid in it, has a lot of phosphoric acid, or salad dressing has a lot of acetic acid. We eat acids all the time. Okay, and your body has to maintain pH, and the kidney is responsible for or helping maintain your pH. Yeah.
Can your body not secrete, like if you have a lot of excess sodium, can your body not secrete all of it out?
Yep. Some people have problems with that, and that leads to hypertension. Because maybe you realize, say you're out drinking a bunch of margaritas with salt all night long. Okay, and let's pretend that it didn't even have alcohol in it, just you're drinking like some kind of margarita without alcohol, but you ate all that salt. How would you wake up the next morning? Yeah, thirsty, yep, for sure thirsty, but you'd feel bloated. Your fingers would be swollen, right, because you have all this excess sodium in your body. And when you have excess sodium, you have a tendency to retain water. Okay, and that's the result of, that would help produce hypertension, because that fluid would end up in your blood vessels. And just think about your car tires. If you put air in your tires, what's going to happen to the pressure of those tires? Go up or down? It goes up, right? So if you put a lot of fluid volume in your blood vessels, guess what happens to your pressure? It goes up. Okay, so that's the basis of when somebody has trouble maintaining their blood pressure, what do we like to give them? On the way to the hospital, like an IV, and we put fluid inside their blood vessels to help maintain their blood pressure until they get to the hospital, right? So even if you have a lot of sodium in your diet, too much, that's going to increase your blood pressure, and so that related to your question. Okay, so sodium is involved with people, or sodium metabolism is involved with people that have hypertension or too high of blood pressure. Okay. Okay, so is that helpful to draw it out on the board like that and see the three different processes? So during the test, you should be, I'm not going to ask you to draw it, because I'll probably grade the test like a couple minutes after you turn it in to me. And if I had to grade everybody's drawing, that'd be too complicated. It would take me a day or so. So I'll photocopy that figure and put it on the test, and you got to label the various parts of the nephron. But you might have to answer a question regarding the function of the nephron, like what is tubular secretion, what's tubular reabsorption, that kind of thing. Okay, and particularly maybe which way it goes, blood to filtrate or filtrate to blood. Okay, is that bad? That's not bad. Okay. All right, so I'm going to erase all this right here. Or should I have you guys draw it out on the test? Should I have you draw it out on the test?
If that was the whole test.
That's a thought. Oh, that's beautiful. Well, how long would it take you to take the test then? No, you wouldn't. Okay, somebody time me. Somebody time me. Okay. Somebody should time me. I'll draw the whole nephron, the vascular elements, the tubular elements, and how many processes? The three processes. Who's got a stopwatch? You do? Yeah. Okay, what's this? Bowman's capsule. And what's this? Proximal convoluted tubule. And then what's this? Descending loop of Henle. And this is the ascending loop of Henle. And then what do we got? Distal convoluted tubule going to? Yeah, the collecting duct. All right, so we're almost done. What do we got here? Afferent arteriole, then the glomerulus. Efferent arteriole. And then we got the peritubular capillaries. I'm even going slow. Okay, all right, this is to the renal vein right over here. Peritubular capillaries. All right, so what do we call this process? That's filtration. What do we call this process? Blood to filtrate. Tubular secretion. Oh, I'm sorry, I went out of order. And then from filtrate back to blood, what is that? Tubular reabsorption. Okay, time. 107. 1 minute and 7 seconds. I tell you what, we should put that on the final, but I'll give you guys twice that time to do it. I'll give you 2 minutes.
So can the secretion and reabsorption happen in either side of the loop of Henle?
Yes, it can. Yep. Over here on this side of the loop of Henle, it's kind of set up really for reabsorption, and it happens a lot, and it just happens, it's just like the motor is running full speed over here. And then on the proximal side over here, it can be adjusted via hormones for either reabsorption or secretion. So it's mostly reabsorption here, and it's going full bore to reabsorb as much water as possible. And then the distal tubules over here, it can be adjusted.
So it can happen in the tubules too?
Yeah.
So multiple choice, if you ask where, it can be in the loop of Henle and the tubules?
Yeah, I don't think I'd ask that question.
Yeah, get in here.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, abbreviations are good. Number 5. Okay, where does filtration take place? Bowman's capsule. And then reabsorption and secretion? In the tubules. Yeah. Yeah, so one good exam question would be, some of you have a copy of the question, I got to make more copies, would be, where does filtration take place? Yeah, Bowman's capsule, glomerulus, something like that. And where does tubular reabsorption and secretion take place? Out over here someplace, right, in the tubules. But not the glomerulus and Bowman's capsule. Okay? Okay.
Are you going to tell me the renin and angiotensin?
Didn't I do that last time?
No. It's not even on the handout anyway. But you asked 3 questions on it.
Yeah, let's see. Corpus luteum. Wrong one. Oh, let's go over the renin-angiotensin aldosterone mechanism. I don't know if I have a slide on it. If not, we'll draw it out. You should probably draw it out anyway. Oh, wait a second. That's the respiratory system. All right, way back when we were talking about the cardiovascular system, there was something that maintained blood pressure when you change body position. For instance, when you're sitting down and you stand up, there's something that adjusts your blood pressure so you don't pass out. There is a barometer in there, and it's a, we use that same kind of term to define the reflex. We call it the baroreceptor reflex. So you do have barometers in your blood vessels to measure pressure. Okay, so the baroreceptor reflex changes or regulates your blood pressure short term, from second to second, so you don't pass out. But there's another mechanism that works long term. Okay, not from second to second, but from day to day. Right, and we got a different name for that one. And I got a nice slide I'll show you, but I think maybe I'll draw some of this on the board anyway. Okay, but I got to erase the board first. You ready to erase the board? Okay. So here it is. It's called the renin, and it's, I understand it's correctly pronounced renin, but I can't really bring myself to say that, so I say renin. The renin angiotensin dash aldosterone mechanism. It's a kidney chapter. Urinary system mechanism. All right, now it seems really long and involved, and maybe it is a little bit, but it's not too bad. So this is most important mechanism for what? For long-term regulation of what? Blood pressure. What's the most important mechanism for short-term regulation of blood pressure? The baroreceptor reflex. Relying on the baroreceptors in your carotid sinus, going to your brain, and then changing your heart rate, for instance, and force a contraction of the heart. But this one right here works on regulating blood volume. That's the essential mechanism by which it works. So what happens to your blood pressure when you take blood out of you? It drops. Like in a hemorrhage or something, your blood pressure is going to drop. And what would be one way to boost somebody's blood pressure up? Add blood volume to that person, like hooking up an IV. Even if it's saline, that will help their blood pressure. Okay. And one way that your body adjusts blood volume is by making more or less urine. Right. So if you're excreting a lot of urine, you'll be losing blood volume. And what's going to happen to your blood pressure when you lose blood volume? If you form a lot of urine, your blood pressure is going to go down. Right? But if you retain a lot of water, guess what happens to your blood pressure? It goes up. Okay. So let's see how this all starts. Okay. Here you have the liver. Right here. That's your liver. And your liver is going to synthesize a compound called angiotensinogen. Awfully big word, but if you can remember your nomenclature, what does this ogen at the end of a word mean? It's inactive. It's ready to go to work at a moment's notice, but it's not doing anything at this particular time. Right? Angiotensinogen is inactive. Another one was what? Prothrombin. Whenever there's a pro at the beginning of a word, it's inactive as well. So So angiotensin, we're loaded with angiotensin right now, but it's not doing anything because it's a precursor to something that's going to be an active form. Okay. Another organ. Let's see if I can draw this. What does that look like? That looks like a kidney. Okay? Kind of. Okay. Well, this kidney, if your blood pressure, right, BP is blood pressure, if your blood pressure decreases, the kidney can monitor that decrease in blood pressure. Okay? And when that happens, the kidney is going to secrete something into the blood called renin. And renin is an enzyme. What does an enzyme do? Yeah, it speeds up the rate of a reaction. It can convert something into something else. And what it does is that it converts angiotensinogen into what? Guess what? An active form. And we don't call it angiotensinogen anymore. We call it angiotensin. And we call it angiotensin 1 because there's another form. Angiotensin 1 is kind of powerful. It has a little bit of an effect, but it has a cousin molecule, and we call that angiotensin 2. And the conversion from angiotensin 1 to angiotensin 2 happens in a couple tissues, and maybe even in the walls of blood vessels, but a lot of times in the lungs. In the lungs, because in the lungs there is an enzyme called, I guess I got to write it out, angiotensin converting enzyme. But what do normal people call angiotensin converting enzyme? ACE. Which is what? ACE. I'll maybe make sense of this when we get done with the whole mechanism. Okay, angiotensin converting enzyme, or ACE. So ACE is what we have between angiotensin 1 and angiotensin 2. We're more than half done. But we still got another little step to take. Okay, angiotensin 2 is now in the blood. It goes to the adrenal cortex. And it causes the adrenal cortex to secrete, guess what? It's in the title right here. It's the last hormone that I have in the title. What's the last hormone? Aldosterone is the last hormone. Aldosterone. Right. Aldosterone. And that's a hormone. All right, so I'll put hormone right over here. Renin was an enzyme. Angiotensin and angiotensin 2, these are both hormones. Okay. These are both hormones. A hormone just means that it's going to cause something to happen. It's a signaling molecule. And an enzyme is just something that converts one chemical into another kind of chemical. All right, so it's a hormone. And aldosterone goes back to the kidney. And in the kidney, it causes water and sodium reabsorption. Okay, so let's figure out what reabsorption is. What is reabsorption? Which way do things go for reabsorption? Blood to filtrate or filtrate to blood? Filtrate to blood, you're right. Okay, so let me put that in parentheses. filtrate with an arrow to blood. Okay. So water and sodium go from filtrate to blood. Now the question is, what happens to your blood pressure when that process is stimulated? Yeah, it goes up. Okay, just like putting air in your tire, what happens to the pressure inside that tire? It goes up. If you put extra water in your blood, guess what's going to happen to the pressure? It's going to go up. Okay, and sodium is going to help make that happen because sodium is going to hold on to that water that's in your cardiovascular system. Now, so your blood pressure goes up. Now, does that add to the stimulus or subtract from the stimulus? What was the initial stimulus that we had here? A drop in blood pressure. So the initial stimulus was a drop in blood pressure. It resulted in this mechanism right here that did what? Compensated for that drop in blood pressure by bringing it back up. So this is a nice negative feedback mechanism that brings your blood pressure back up to where it should be. But this takes a while to happen. This can't happen at a moment's notice, right? But it's slow to happen, but because it's slow to happen, it will have an effect for a long period of time. So that's why we call this the most important mechanism for what? Long-term regulation of blood pressure. We call this the renin-angiotensin-aldosterone mechanism. Adrenal cortex, right? The adrenal gland is right on top of the kidney like this. And the cortex is just the superficial part of the adrenal gland. Adrenal means on top of the kidney. What organ? Adrenal gland? Yep, adrenal gland. Adrenal gland, and if you're really particular, you'd say adrenal cortex. Aldosterone, yeah, adrenal cortex. Adrenal cortex secretes aldosterone. Okay, by what? Resorbing water that's in that filtrate and putting it back in your blood, that jacks up your blood pressure. Okay, so here is a nice slide of that. Actually, I like my diagram better. That's why I drew it on the board. But the one in your book is not bad. It's right here. Okay, so you have blood. And you got, what do you got in the blood all the time, ready to go to work? Angiotensinogen that comes from the liver. So the liver is producing that factor all the time. And then you have the kidney. If the kidney senses a change in something, it's going to release renin. What's going to be the stimulus for the release of renin? Yeah. So if I put decreased blood pressure, okay, decreased blood pressure is going to release renin. And your question is, how does it know that? There's something called a juxtaglomerular apparatus inside the kidney. And it's just measuring blood pressure and the concentration of various ions in your blood all the time. And it's also measuring oxygen concentration in the blood. And if it sees a decrease in blood pressure in that juxtaglomerular apparatus, then it's going to release renin. And then just for your own information, if it sees a decrease in oxygen concentration, it's not going to release renin, it's going to release erythropoietin. And erythropoietin goes to red blood cells to stimulate red blood cell production. So the kidneys are really busy kind of organ doing a lot of amazing things all the time. All right, so anyway, the kidney releases renin. That converts angiotensinogen into angiotensin 1, which is fairly active, but not as active as angiotensin 2. But there's an enzyme in the lungs called angiotensin converting enzyme that converts 1 into angiotensin 2, right? And this is going to have, right, an effect besides going to the adrenal cortex to produce aldosterone. It's going to cause a vasoconstriction of blood vessels. which is going to increase your blood pressure. In any case, angiotensin 2 is going to what? Increase blood pressure right here. Now, you might know some people that have hypertension. What are some ways that we can help treat somebody with hypertension? What kind of pharmaceutical agents would we like to prescribe? Oh, like Lasix, yeah. That's a diuretic. So what does a diuretic do? Instead of taking water from the filtrate that would end up in urine and putting it in blood, what does it do? It just puts a lot of water into, that's in the filtrate, into urine, so you lose water. What happens when you lose water? You lose blood volume. What happens to your blood pressure? It goes down. So when you give Lasix to somebody as a diuretic, they lose blood volume, they lose water, and their blood pressure goes down. That's a kind of a nice mechanism. Okay, there's something else. There's another class of drugs that we can help people with hypertension besides something that reduces their blood volume because it makes them urinate a lot. There is, okay, what does angiotensin converting enzyme do? Converts angiotensin 1 into 2, and what's the ultimate effect of going from angiotensin 1 to 2? It increases your blood pressure. What happens if we were to block that enzyme? Guess what would happen to your blood pressure if we were to block this enzyme? Instead of going up, it would do what? It would go down. That's another class of drugs. Maybe you've heard of ACE inhibitors. ACE inhibitors, again, is another fine pharmaceutical agent for reducing somebody's blood pressure by what? Blocking the conversion of angiotensin 1 into angiotensin 2. So that's why this mechanism is so important, because, you know, there's probably millions of Americans that are dealing with this mechanism daily by taking drugs like Lasix or ACE inhibitors or something like that to help maintain their or bring their blood pressure back down to normal. Yeah. Angiotensin 1 and angiotensin 2 via aldosterone and then also by other effects on the blood vessels will increase your blood pressure.
But is converted?
Yeah.
The other one?
Yeah. It lowers it because angiotensin 1 is not as powerful as angiotensin 2. This has a weak effect. And just by decreasing the amount of angiotensin 2, your blood pressure will come down. And the enzyme that does that is ACE, and so we like to give ACE inhibitors to somebody that has hypertension, for instance, that helps with their blood pressure because of this mechanism right here. But what does it have to do with? It has to do with their water balance and their salt balance. That's one of the reasons why somebody would have hypertension. Okay, so the baroreceptor reflex is not so important for somebody with hypertension, but what? This long-term mechanism here is very critical. Okay, so I think that's the last thing in the urinary system. So next time when we come together, we're going to answer some of the questions because I didn't photocopy the questions for everybody. But maybe I'll just look and see. Oh, I got one more left. Who needs one? In arm's reach. Okay. You know what? If you want to follow me up to my office after class, I can even get it to you after class. Well, some of these questions are pretty easy. Like the first one is know the structures of the urinary system. I'll go over it again next time, but it doesn't help just to think of it right now. What are the gross anatomical structures in the urinary system? Kidney. Ureters, urinary bladder, and then urethra. So I won't go over that one again. That's pretty simple. Okay, that's pretty good. And then what are the functions of the urinary system? Ah, now that's a little bit complicated. Functions of the urinary system? Yeah, it removes waste products from the blood. And it helps control blood volume, like what we were talking about right here, through what, this renin-angiotensin-aldosterone mechanism, right? So that means it also maintains your blood pressure or whatever. Regulates electrolyte levels. For instance, an electrolyte in this particular case with aldosterone would be sodium. aldosterone will reabsorb sodium from the filtrate. What else? pH. Yeah, if you have too much acid in your body, how does your kidney get rid of that excess acid in your body? It's one of those three processes. Not necessarily filtration, not reabsorption, it would be secretion, tubular secretion. Taking hydrogen ions from the filtrate, from the blood and putting it directly into the filtrate. So that's one of the things. It also what? Controls red blood cell production because it will secrete erythropoietin. When oxygen concentration in the blood goes down, and that erythropoietin will stimulate red blood cell production. Okay, I think we'll go over some of this stuff next time. Into the filtrate. Yeah, sorry. I misspoke. So when you're acidic, it secretes hydrogen ions from blood into filtrate. That's tubular secretion. Okay. All right, well, let me go on to the next chapter for a little bit. Not too long. But what is that next chapter? Reproductive system. Okay, so here's the reproductive system. It's backwards, but that's it. All right, so, you know, we always like to start out with the function of the reproductive system. Like, we started off with the function of the urinary system, and we had a whole bunch of different kinds of functions. Now, what is the function of the reproductive system? Well, you must have been reading your notes because you just didn't say reproduction. Okay, because guess what? If you say just to reproduce, you'd be wrong, right, in my opinion. Because a lot of animals can reproduce. For instance, if you're a hydra, do you know what a hydra is? It's like an animal that lives in coral. It's a polyp. It's just a tube with a bunch of tentacles on it, you know, and the tentacles grab things and it eats all day long. Well, for instance, if you're a hydra, you'll just grow another little hydra on your side, and then it will break off, and it will be another little hydra over there. But do people do that? Do people grow like little people on their sides, and then it breaks off and forms a little person someplace? No. If that were to happen, what would that little person be like compared to, like, the mother person? It would be exactly the same. Okay? All right, and so that's not what happens in people. All right, so that's just plain old reproduction. Now, what's special about people when they reproduce? Yeah, it's called sexual reproduction, which is the topic of this chapter right here. But I don't know. I guess you should think a little bit about that. If you're a woman in here, are you exactly like your mom? Okay. Some of you might say, well, you know, I'm pretty close. But most of you are going to say what? No, I'm not really exactly like my mom. And if you're a guy, are you exactly like your dad? No, you're not. And as a matter of fact, if you're a guy in here and you have brothers at home, are you exactly like any of your brothers? No. Okay, so actually, the reproductive system, when I think of the function of the reproductive system, it's really as plain as the nose on your face, okay, which is what? It's different than everybody else's nose. And as a matter of fact, your whole body is different than everybody else's body. So the purpose of the reproductive system is really to produce something that is new and unique. So you're new and unique compared to any of your parents or brothers and sisters. That's the whole purpose of the reproductive system. Another way of saying that is that the reproductive system produces diversity in a population. Right? It makes everybody different. And that's really a very powerful and important mechanism. And that's the whole reason why we have two different sexes and we got whole different set of sex organs and different hormones that control everything, because it's so important to produce diversity in a population and not to produce the same thing over and over and over again. Okay. As a matter of fact, when it came to bones, remember what I said was really weird about your bone, your skeletal system? in terms of a disease process, there's one disease process that all women in here will experience if you live old enough. Osteoporosis. And that's really wild, I think, because if there is a disease process, it's extremely rare that everybody in a population will experience that disease process, because why? The human population is diverse. If we were all clones of each other or exactly alike, if one person got sick, what would happen to everybody? Everybody would get sick, okay? But that doesn't happen because of diversity. So that's the important thing about sexual reproduction, right? We are all different, and that makes some of us stronger in some areas and weaker in others, and all the individuals complement each other. And it's sexual reproduction that produces that. Okay, so let's look at reproductive system. Okay, so what is it, what's the function to produce what? New and unique individual. So there's never been anybody like you ever before, and probably not ever again, which is kind of strange. I guess another example I have of that, so your parents, I don't know if you still have parents, if they're both alive or not, but at some point in time, right, they formed you, they made you. Now, is it possible for your parents to produce another you? Okay, but at different times. It could be twins if it's exactly the same time, but say maybe 10 or 20 years apart. Could they produce another you? Well, you know what? The answer is, well, sure they could. If they produced you, they could produce another you. But has that ever happened? You know, in the history of the world, and even if there's life on other planets that do sex like we do sex, it has probably never happened, because the odds of it happening are just so astronomically high that it has never happened. The odds would be trillions and trillions to one. Okay? So it is possible, but sexual reproduction is so good at producing something new and unique, it has never happened. Okay? So make sure you know reproductive system. As a matter of fact, in some other classes, I don't even call it the reproductive system. Guess what I call it? I forgot what I call it. I call it the diversity system. Okay, because of what? It produces diversity. Okay. All right, so what is one complicated thing? Well, we got a couple of different sexes. So the male reproductive system, the primary reproductive structure is what we call the testes. That's sometimes also generically what we call a gonad. All right, and females have gonads too, but they're not testes. They are ovaries. And the job of the testes is to produce sperm. Okay, and a sperm is a gamete. That's just a cell that does certain kinds of special things. But the testes also secrete a hormone. And that hormone is testosterone. Okay, so what the heck is a gamete? I guess maybe I need to draw something on the board again. I don't think I've gone over this. Now is a good time. And the question I'm going to ask is, how many chromosomes do you have in your body? How many chromosomes do you have in your cells? You know what? And we haven't gone over it in class, so there's no reason why I would expect you to know. But some people just kind of might know. Okay, you got 46, and they're specially arranged. How are they arranged? Okay, you've got 46, that's kind of light, huh? Where's this one here? You've got 46 chromosomes. And every species has a little bit different numbers of chromosomes, and there might be some species that have 46, but people have got 46. But in particular, this 46 is arranged in a very special way as two sets. So you got two sets of chromosomes. And if you got 46, you got a number 1 and number 2 all the way down for this set over here. How many? 23. And then over here, you got another number 1. You got another number 2, 3, all the way down to 23 over here. And if you had 23 and 23 together, what do you got? 46. Okay, now why do you have two sets like that? Because one set you got from your mom, We'll say M over here. All right, and the other set, guess where? Dad, right? But we call those P. Okay, so the M stands for maternal, and the P stands for dad. But I guess the real word would be what? Paternal. All right, so maternal and paternal chromosomes, okay, make up most of the cells of your body. Okay. Well, where does sexual reproduction come into this thing? Remember when we talked about mitosis? Okay, when we talked about mitosis, this cell can split apart. You got 46 chromosomes over here, and then you end up with this cell over here and this cell over here. How many chromosomes are in here? You got 46. And 46, if this is mitosis, this is what we call the parent cell. And these are what we call daughter cells. And what's the difference between this daughter cell and that daughter cell? Nothing, even though I drew it a little bit different, not the scale. They're the same. And what's the difference between this daughter cell and the parent cell? You know what? Again, there's no difference. They have the same number of chromosomes. So mitosis just produces the same thing over and over and over again, which is different than sexual reproduction. In sexual reproduction, we start with this guy here, 46 cells, and we end up with a cell that only has half the number of chromosomes. It only has a 1 through 23. Okay? And sometimes it's the number 1 from M, sometimes it's the number 1 from P, and then the next chromosome, number 2, sometimes it's M, sometimes it's P. It's always just a random pick as to which chromosome ends up in this cell over here. And this process is what we call meiosis. So the number of chromosomes decreases, and sometimes that process produces this little guy. What's that little guy? That's a sperm. But in females, it's not a sperm, it's an egg. Or an ovum, but in any case, it only has half the number of chromosomes. And this guy right here, or if there's an egg, now, can an egg swim around? No, that's too bad. Only sperms can swim around. Oh, the egg, it is large. This is true. It is noteworthy. Okay. So here you have sperm. Here you have egg. All right, and because it has half the number of chromosomes, we call these things gametes. These are both gametes. One's a female gamete, one's a male gamete. Okay, that's just some terminology. And how are gametes produced? What's the name of the process that produces gametes? Can you see that on the board? That is what we call meiosis. It reduces the number of chromosomes. All right, now here's a good mind twister. Let's name another process. If you know right away, don't say it out loud right away. Give me a couple seconds. What's the name of the process where you have a sperm and an egg coming together to form another cell? Now, it's got what? How many chromosomes? It doesn't have 23. It's got 23 plus 23. It's back to 46 chromosomes. And I'll tell you the name of this cell. This single cell right here is what we call a zygote. That's a zygote. And what's the name of that process? Is it mitosis or meiosis or what's going on there? And you all know what it's called. That's conception. Yeah, that's conception. But the scientific word we usually say? Fertilization. Yes, that's fertilization. Okay. See, all this is actually really fun stuff to know all this stuff. Okay, so fertilization is what? Fertilization is the production of this zygote here from two gametes. All right, and the single cell is what we call a zygote. So we were all just a single cell one time, and then that zygote gets bigger and bigger through cell division, mitosis, right? And we just get bigger and bigger and bigger until we produce more gametes later on in life. All right, so what structure in the male produces these gametes? The testes does. That's the job of the testes. Okay, so that's where this little thing here, gamete, came from. So the name of the process in the testes that produces this gamete right here is what? Let's go over that one more time. What's the name of that process in the testes that produces this gamete? That's meiosis. And in the testes, what's the official name of that gamete right there? That's a sperm, okay? And a sperm is highly motile. Okay, so I think next time we're going to start looking at these some of these secondary reproductive structures after we go over the questions for urinary system. Okay? And then we got another lecture after that even. So I think we got plenty of time to go over this stuff. And then maybe even do a review for the test. Okay, the test is going to be respiratory system, urinary system, how about digestive system and reproductive system? Okay, but not two chapters in reproduction, just one chapter, probably just 19. And then not everything in 19, just whatever we talk about in lecture. Okay? Yeah, but don't forget, next time you got a quiz. What's the quiz on next time? Urinary system.